record on this computer. So we'll start up again. We got to go through the conditionals and try to get through everything by 5 o'clock. So I hope some of you came back, and I will try to answer some of the questions and stuff that people have had. So I'm going to start a new notebook, new Jupyter notebook for this session. So I'll go over this again. I just go back up and scroll up. So I have three of them open, A, B, and C. You see this little arrow up here. You need to file new Jupyter notebook is one way to do it. And you can open that up, open it with Python 3 as the kernel. And then I usually go and just rename these and rename the notebook. And I'm gonna call this session D with today's date on here. So we'll rename that, and I'll give everybody the notebooks on the website after the presentation. So we're gonna start here with conditionals. Right here, and then I would change this to raw just so I can enter it and then change back to the code. So this means code on the side. So, and then, you know, we go through and do that. Try to keep things going on the typing, not too fast, but hopefully we're recording these videos so we can go back and watch them afterwards. For everybody that doesn't know, I'll go back up here. You can see my website. If you want, just Google, should be able to, David Deline, UND maybe. And let's see, you can go to Aeros. The second one is Atmospheric Science one. It gets for our whole department. And then you have to go to my personal web page. Some place in here, there's faculty and staff, which is what I'm on. And then if you come down to me and, oh, they don't have the mail to. Oh, they don't have the web pages on here anymore. Interesting. So why don't they have the web pages? Oh, let's try this again. Well, this one gives you the air. Oh, doesn't come up on the Google. Makes it harder to find my page. Maybe if you put aerosol in it, we'll get my personal page. Well, the UND directory one, I think, has it. No. Well, yes. Anyway, research projects. Eventually you can get to it, but I guess they took it off the department page. So it's aerosol.atmos.und.edu, and you go under teaching. And then you go on coursework and get the program in Python to get to the link. Yeah, everybody. You go to directory. I don't know if that comes up. Yeah, you can find the website here. Oh yeah, it's on the side here. If you go to the visit the website, if you go under the directory at UND, that's probably the best way. Thanks, Vance. Look under the directory and you can get that. Anyway. Everybody should be up, got this started. answer some of the questions. But we need to do conditionals now. And I will try to hit this in a few minutes to go over conditionals. How can programs do different things with different data? Correctly write programs that use if, then, else statements, simple Boolean expressions. Trace the execution of unnested conditional loops with for statements. So if then statement, if statement is called a conditional statement, controls whether a block of code is executed or not. A lot of times we put these within for loops. So for example, you can just say mass equals 3.54, and then if mass greater than 3, then you can print the mass. So remember, print is a function, is large, and then we can go back and reassign mass is equal to 2.07. If mass is greater than 3, you can print the mass is large. I should say large, not larger. So we just assign mass to a variable and print that out. And you'll notice that the when it is above 3, you print out this statement, and this one you don't. And of course, it's indented. So we don't have to start the loop or start the block of the if-then statement. We just put the colon and indent. So it's kind of similar to Fortran, but you don't have the or C where you don't have the beginning and ending expressions. So that's good. Conditionals are often used inside of loops. So that's one of the loops. So you should see that pretty good in terms of the mass. So let's create a list here, sometimes called an array in this sense, but because we only have numbers, but we call it a list. Let's get the list going in. And oops, gotta go back and do something for the list. We'll say m in masses. So we're in a loop over all of our masses. If the mass is greater than 3.0, we're gonna print m is large. So now we have the for loop. We're going to start our list there after assigning the start our loop there after assigning the list. We're going to check to see if m is greater than 3. So every time we go through, m is going to be equal to what the mass is. So we have 5 of them in here, and just print it out when it's large. And so I execute that, and you'll see it only prints out 2 times, basically the first and third time through the loop. So this is an example how you indent multiple times. So 4 spaces there, and then again another 4 spaces for a total of 8 spaces. So we can do that. So that should be good to print everything out. So a lot of times you don't want to just print one thing, you want to print multiple things, and always check for both cases. So if we have this mass value like we had before, I'm just going to copy and paste this down here so we have the same starting thing. But we're going to have a if m is greater than 3.0 again, print out m is large. Okay, now I'm going to go back, hit the backspace key, and so I can put in an else statement. Else print m and then is small. So now every time through this loop, we will have either the if statement is true, we get this, or if it's not, we're going to get the second case. So we should get 5 of these Every time through, it says it's large or small based on that if statement. So any questions about adding conditional statements to for loops? I'll pause, maybe try to let people catch up a little bit. And if I go very fast, you can always tell me to try to slow down, but trying to get through this until 5:02. So very simple if-then statements. If we want to have several internal choices instead of just one or the other, we can use an else-if statement. So it's kind of like a nested if. In some other languages. It's shorter for else if. Again, let's get rid of the couple letters. And it has to be associated with an if statement. And any else if must come before an else statement by itself, because the else is a catch-all. This is a last statement. It will catch everything else that's not in there. So let's go through and do this again. Let's set up our three variables again. So I'll do another block of code here. And this time, keep that there. I'm going to do if m is greater than 9.0, we're going to print m is huge. And then we're going to put an else if m is greater than 3.0. And then we're going to print m is large. And then we'll go back and do else again and print m is small. So I got three of these. This one will take everything. And this one will just take if it's greater than three and it doesn't fall into this, and unless this was the case. So if this is true, it's going to do that. Otherwise, it checks if this is true, and it will do that. And if neither one of the first two is true, then we get small. So large, small, huge, and small. So you can continue this with else ifs all the way down and keep adding more and more tests. So they go in order one at a time. So from the start to the bottom. And once one thing is outputted, it will then not do the other ones. So if it's greater than 9, it says it's huge, and then it quits. It doesn't say it's huge, it is small, is large, and all three of them. So it only does one of the conditions within the if statement. So we can do an example of this. So it doesn't automatically go back and reevaluate the values beforehand. Just to illustrate this, the grade equals 85, we're going to say. And if grade is greater than or equal to 70, we're going to print grade is C. Else if grade is greater than or equal to 80, And then you gotta have your colon, print grade is B. And then else if grade is greater than or equal to 90, print grade is C. And if you put that, the first one through is greater than 70, so you get a C and not a B. So the order depends on what you have here. So you should change the order around in that to get your B to come out correctly. Assuming you got 70, 80, 80 to 90 for a B. So you can have complex conditionals on the if then, if we use ands and ors. So if we want to create a parameter, let's check two different things. Mass equals 3.45, 2.07, 9.22, 1.87, 1.71. So we assign our mass, our velocity is equal to 10.00, 20, 30, 25, and 20. So we assign them three masses. We're gonna start some loop here. So a loop variable, we're gonna say I equals zero to begin with, four in range of five, and then we're going to check the masses. Is the mass greater than five and the velocity in I greater than 20? So if that's the case, we want to then print that is a fast, heavy object, and maybe you should duck if you're in the way. So it comes back to this. I just hit my backspace to go back to see the else if mass. Oh, and I want to indent. So I greater than 2 and mass I less than equal, so it's less than or equal to 5, and velocity okay, we have that, and so we'll set this one equal to print normal traffic. We'll do another else if okay, so print slow light object. Okay, and then let's have an else at the end, and we're gonna print out something is up with the data. Check it. So we'll do that and see now if I got these all right. And of course I didn't because I forgot my comma in here. And now what else do I have wrong? Spell velocity wrong. So it takes a while to write your code, and then you got to debug it, get all your typos out of there to get the velocity. And you can have a multiple of these if statements. The other thing, when you do these, you should really enclose the parameters in parentheses, so that if you have an and, you would put it around with a bracket to do that. So then you could put an or statement with something else here. So use the parentheses to enclose different parts of the conditional. So for example, you really don't need to have it with two ands, but particularly important when you have ands and ors. So we can have each one of the ones enclosed in parentheses. It will do the same thing to do the data. So here's a question. What does the following program print out? So text me what the print statement will give. See if you can run that program and see what it outputs. Or just guess at what it outputs. All right, I think everybody gave the answer is 25 here, so you can do that. We're going to start looking at different ways of processing data files. So there's another library called Gobble, along with Pandas. that we had before. And if we do for file name, so this goes along with our data set that we have available. So it's a for loop. And if I get this right and put a dot in here, we introduce reading a couple of libraries and files in, and this construction will give us all the files that end with CSV that are in this data structure. So the star is used to mean one or multiple characters. It's a wild card, just like in Linux when you list files. So it gives you all the files and it loops through them all in the file name context. So we'll do that. So then we're gonna read the file with our CSV read again, the file name. And then we're gonna do an if statement because we wanna check and see if the context is small, we'll print them out. If the length of the contents is less than 50, let's print that. File name and then the length to see what that is. So we're going to input the data, loop through all the files, read that data file in, see what the length of it is, and then print it out if it's small. So you'll see there's multiple files in here, including the process one that we did before. So maybe if I want to get rid of that. Oh, I can delete that. Maybe you can't make it there. Delete that one and just look at the ones that we have available. So this is a nice way to loop over a bunch of files with this. So anyway, summarize this. If statements control whether a program block is executed. Conditionals are often used inside of loops. Use else to execute a block if the conditional is not true, and elif ifs to specify additional ones. So we can see how this goes through and read in a bunch of data files. So questions about if-then statements. Conditional statements. Okay, no questions. Next is looping over data sets. So we're gonna continue to apply these conditionals. So we want to really look at lots of different data sets and different files, be able to read and write using these gobble expressions here, gobbling expressions. Create a list of files, write for the for loops to perform operations on given files. So so in the above example, the file name is a character string. So let's do this again. Import pandas as PD if we want for file name. And now we're going to specify the file names that we want to read. So before we just did Africa. And let's put in another file name. So I'm going to do two different files in here. And I got to put a colon at the end. If I don't, it doesn't advance to the indent the line of code. Okay, so data min, we're going to print this out and we'll run this code. So import the data from two different files and print out the minimum data for every year across the different countries, and then we're going to do this in two different data files. So instead of having just one data file that would combine these, we'll run this and print them out for both of these data files. So you can control which data files you want to do. So gobbling is matching a set of files with a pattern. I showed you how to use the star. There's also the question mark, which means exactly one character, where the star means multiple characters or even zero characters. But a question mark, you have to have exactly one character for every question mark you put in. So we have the above one where we gave two files on this. So let's do the same thing now. We're import this, but instead, let me cheat here and grab that part of the code. And I have to copy it. If I can do this. No, it's not working. I'll print, write it out so you guys can catch up. Import gobble. And I'll just print out all CSV files in data directory. So this will expressly show you what this is doing. It's showing you all the different directories files in there. And of course, if you did something else, like you wanted to print out everything else that's not, let's say it's not a CSV file, but in it in PDB, it would be an empty list. So getting these file names gives us a good way to process the data. So we can use this in a for loop. So for file name in, and let's use a gobble again. I like to do that. Read our data within the for loop. And print out the file name and then the data GDP per capita 1952. And then let's do the minimum of that. And of course I have an error. I do have that imported as PD, right? I'm sure I wrote this wrong. GDP per cap minimum file name data data equals. Oh, is it? I think it's the I got a capital C instead of a lowercase c. So that's an example of how one letter can really mess you up in the data. So here's a question for everybody. Can you tell me which of the following numbers is correct? So I'll give you this example. So if I put this as a markup, raw data, sorry. And I should put in numbers here, let's say one. So if you text me one, if this is the answer, two, if this is the answer, 3.0. And then four, if both one and two are true. So go ahead and text me which one of these files is not matched by the expression. So you can look at what's in data and which ones are not matched. Okay, next example, you got to change or modify the code with the underscores. We want the fewest records. So modify the code so that it prints the number of records in the file that has the fewest records. And we might have a new parameter here, data frame shape. That's a new method we haven't talked about before, and it returns a triplet with the number of rows and columns of the data frame. Oh, and just so I'm complete, the answer to the previous question was 1. It does not provide number 1 because it doesn't have AS in it. There's an AS here. So we'll get this one, and there's an AS at the beginning here. So it's tricky that 2 and 3 are both provided. So the only one that's not is that. So anyway, there's a float, and we want to set the fewest to a very high number. And so what's the highest number you can have? So we'll call it infinity. So you can define that to be the very highest number. So we loop over the data files for that. Then the data frame equals PD read CSV. Again, we got to use the CSV method, file name, and then fewest equals the minimum. Shape. And then we'll print out the values here. So let's see if I so the smallest file has two records. Okay, so next we're going to do a program, and I just want to give you an example for the time that we have here. So we want to do a program write a program that reads in the regional data set and plots the average GDP for each region. So this is a little bit longer program, but I'll just show you what it does without having you to do it. So we're going to read in our Gabo, Pandas, and Matplotlib, make a plot, loop through all the variables, loop through all the file names, read the files, get the region that we split off from the data file using the file name split, and then do a plot of the data frame, and then at the end we'll add a legend and show the plot. Okay, so here is the GDP over time with the legend given. And it's kind of small, so that's why these things are squished together. So anyway, I just want to show you that now in, really there's three lines here, three more lines, four more lines without the comments. So in 10 lines, you can read in your data files, create a plot of all the data. So very easy to read in the data, make your plots for the different ones, and then you can do something simple, get it working, and then go through and modify things. So this is an example of how a for loop is good for processing files, using Gobble to do the get the list of all the files to match them. So we'll do all that for looping over the files. And so that ends the looping over data sets. Basically, we use the for loop and we go over them. So now, what after four, we got writing functions, variable scope, and programming style to finish up here before the end. So we talk, that gives you an idea how to loop over the data. So a lot of times you want to look at writing functions next. So any questions about looping over the data? Okay. Someone's writing functions, asking questions. Writing functions. So functions, how do you create your own? Is the idea of what we want to do. We want to explain, identify the difference between functions definitions and function calls. Write a function that takes a small fixed number of arguments and produces a result. So the idea of functions is to break programs into small, easy to understand parts that humans can keep in their memory. We got very little memory, working memory to work with. So we want to keep things small and easy to understand. So it encapsulates the complexity so that it can be treated as a single thing. The additional thing about functions is you can reuse them. So it's good for reuse. Function begins with a DF for definition of it. And then we need the name of the function. So let's say like print greeting. And then we have our colon. And then we'll do what the body of the function is, hello. So there is a very simple function, print greeting. With the stuff in parentheses is the arguments to pass to the function. In this case, it's empty, and we can add them later. And then like the for loop, it ends in a colon, and then it's indented. So the body of a function is indented four spaces. So we define a function, but it's not ran, it's not executed. So to execute that, we want to do print greeting and execute the function, and then it will print out hello world. So usually this print out something is not so useful. A lot of times we want to pass things into the function. We want to specify parameters when we're defining these functions. So the parameters that we pass in become variables when the function is executed. So when you pass the arguments in, the arguments will be matched to the parameters in order that the parameters are passed into the function. So let's define a new function, def print the date, and then we're going to use year, month, day. So we have three arguments to this function. Join them together. So we're going to define a new variable, year plus. So we're going to concatenate these strings together. And I gotta have my close parentheses on month. So we concatenate the three together, and then we're gonna print it out. Okay. And then we define the definition, then we need to print the date, 1871, 3/19. And I'm gonna make my rounded parentheses to call the function. So there we go. We printed out the date by passing three integers as parameters into the function. Once they come into the function, the variables year, month, and day are defined. So we could name the functions. So instead of just passing them in, we could do something like say year equals and month equals and day equals. So we could pass them in by defining what the parameters are. So it's good to pass things in. To get values out of a function, we have to use a return value. The return can occur anywhere in a function, but usually we put it at the end because it's easier to understand that way. And typically we return the final value. So we can go through, define a function df. We'll do an average of values. And if we're going to check the length of the values, so it's not, is it equal? If it's identically equal to zero, we're going to return none because we can't take the average. Otherwise, we're going to return the sum of all the values divided by the length. So we got to check the link to see that we have that function available. So that's the definition of the function. And then we have to define something to send into the function. So say we want to average 1, 3, and 4. And print average of actual values. So the average is 2.6 and repeats to put in the average, and we don't have, and that works as expected. And if you, you know, put something in where you have an empty set, it would just return none. Okay, give you an example of our code to write. So let's write a function to, again, fill in the blanks. So create a function that takes a single file name as an argument, loads the data in the file, name by the argument, and returns the minimum value in that data. So here's the lines of code to modify. So try to text me the three lines of code that you would have on this. Anybody out there? Tell me the answer. Okay. Remember. File name here, and then we need to have a PD read CSV of that file name, and then we need to return what we want, which is minimum of that data. And so that's the definition of that function. So I could give you some more examples, but I think in order of time, we only have about 45 minutes left. So we got a couple more topics to cover. I'd like to just summarize the key points of functions. They break programs to make them easier to understand. DEF is to define them, in with colons. When I defined this function here, but I didn't run it. And then you have to augment, rematch all the parameters into the function, and then you return the values with the return value. So questions about functions. Any questions? Text, speak up. So, no questions. Variable scope. We want to talk about variable scope. And a lot of times we talk about this in terms of functions. What's the scope of the variable within the function and globally through all the programs and all the functions called? And it helps to know about this so you determine how you determine where errors occur. So we want to know how to identify local and global variables, identify parameters as local, and read and trace a program to see how the functions work. Scope of variable is part of a program that can see it. So the scope is what part of the program. The scope is, again, what part of the program that can see that variable, that knows what that variable means. We want to limit the scope because there are only so many sensible names for variables. So if everybody, only one function could use a name like velocity, it would be pretty hard to come up with good other names. And then if you use these, you don't have to know what the scope, if it's local, for that variable would be. So let's write a program and pressure equals 103.9. We do a definition adjust temperature, colon, temperature equals T times 1.43 divided by pressure, and then we're going to return temperature. So we have this program. Pressure now is a global variable. It's defined outside of any particular function, and it's visible everywhere. So globals are visible everywhere. T, temperature, are local variables within the function adjust. Not visible to the main program. So let's do a couple of things here. Let's print adjusted. And print so adjusted gives you the number, and then when we try to print temperature, we get an error. So temperature is not defined, even though it's defined in the program, in the function, sorry, it's not available as a global variable. So you can't print it out after you call that function. Give you another example here of a code. Let's say limit equals 100. I'm going to define a function crip value, return minimum maximum 0.0 value limit, and value equals minus 22.5, print So can you trace the values of all programs used before and after they exist? So why is the value 0 in this? Because didn't I set the value to minus 22.5, right? That goes into here. And then we're going to take the maximum of 0 and minus 22, you get 0. And then you take the minimum of 0 and limit comes from the global variable, so it would be 0 as the output. Okay, what a bit about globals. Basically, try to keep the global variables. It's not very good to use limit from a global passed into the function. If you're going to use limit, you should probably pass it in as an argument. So you redefine it so that your variables are defined within your functions. So the key point here is the scope of the variables that can see them. And so usually you separate out the values from the globals to the locals. And a lot of times you will define your values to be what you have, to give them an initial value so that you don't have to worry about globals coming in and corrupting your variables and your scope of your program. So that's variable scope, pretty straightforward. Any questions about that? Okay. Okay. The next thing to talk about is programming style. And it's all about readability. So when we do science, we don't do it for ourselves. We do it for others so we can figure out what it is, or we do it for ourselves, but not today, but for something in a week or a month or a year. I had to go back and look at programs that are 20 years old. So if you're working your master's thesis now, 20 years later, someone asked me about the code. And so you would never, if you don't use good programming style, understand that code. And I've had talked to programmers and said, please explain what this is doing. I can't understand it. And they sit down for half an hour and try to figure it out. And then they really give up and don't know what the program does, even though they wrote it. So that's why most programmers format their code. And then the other thing is how you can programs can check their own operations is a good thing to talk about. we want to provide some justification for basic rules of coding style, talk about refactoring, how to refactor code to make it more readable. And there's community standards for coding. So Python's pretty strong on style. I wouldn't read a code that wasn't indented properly. People have given me them to look at. Why doesn't my code work? Well, I can't understand it because you haven't indented it. So you can do stuff like that in C, but in Python, you have to indent things. So the style is built into the code. There's naming variables, very important how you do this. There's a Google style guide for Python. There's standards for Python libraries. One of the main things is to use an assertion to a simple but powerful method to make sure the context in which your code is executed is as expected. So for example, let's define a function and we'll use density. And the first thing we're gonna do is define what this function does. Describe that. Okay, and then we're gonna assert that the volume has to be greater than zero, because if we return the mass divided by the volume, and the volume is not greater than zero, a mass wouldn't be right. So we want to define that. We're using that assertion. If the insertion is false, the Python interpreter raises a assertion error, runtime exception. The code of the thing is executed and fails the assertion. The part here is called a doc string. It provides built-in help to your function. It's usually the first thing in a function. Characters are separated by three of these string parentheses. So it attaches that as part of a built-in help variable. And the doc string is string for documentation string. And so when you document your code, you have to do it as you write the code, because you don't have time to go back and document it later. If you don't do it as you write it, you won't get it later on. So here's an example of a code that is provided some help to it. For our average function that we talked about earlier, it will provide help then on average when you define it. So very useful. You can do this multiple lines of code if you want. So you can all practice documenting your code, and you should do this at one time as you go. Once you get your code working, you want to clean it up right away, short out the programs, try to predict what it does, and do that. So here's an example of some code. And take a look at this and see if you could figure out what it does. I shouldn't have ran the code, but look at something like that. No comments, nothing in there. And I gave you the solution of what it is. outputted here, but it's very difficult to see what's going on without some documentation in the code. So you do that. The better way to do this is to go through and do a lot of documentation of your code as you write it. So what this code it needs is some what we call refactoring. So if you want to refactor the code, means to basically use the same logic but make it easier to understand. So one way to do that is to use functions. So we can break it up and use string machine here as a function in this code. Define a doc string, have some comments in here, and then call the function at the end to give that parameters out. So this is how you can document your code to get things working. So sorry, I don't have much examples of doing this, just have to do it. And one of the things that I haven't gone over much is outside of the Jupyter notebooks, but I will show you a couple of things to begin with. So I gave you this, some examples for Python. If you go to my website, I have guides and available. So I have an article guide, a data processing guide, a user things, what presentations, make science presentations. But the other one that's important is a programming guide. And this is where I talk about how to do programs and the styles of the programs, I should say. So a lot about how to do documentation, and a lot of them conform to the Python standard. So you should have a good title for your file. The file name usually goes by what you call in the program. And please, no spaces in your file names. Spaces is allowed in Windows, but it really confounds the use of spaces. Use underscores. Never use a space in any file name title. Header comments. So this is kind of like your doc string. What should you put in your doc string to describe something? I like the name, purpose, syntax, parameters that come into the function, execution examples, and then history is important for who wrote this, who's modified it, particularly if you got people that are writing multiple codes. And then if you want people to use it, which we all want people to do, a copyright is nice. I never use tabs in any of this stuff today, so don't use tabs. Hit four spaces and go over. Tabs, we don't know what they're defined to be. Modification section, syntax output, output your code. Indent code within loops, Python makes you do that. I like to keep the character links to line links to 80 characters and less. Indent the lines of code. And if you're going to comment some code out, I like to use two of the comment characters, so two number signs in Python, and then remove them if you're testing your code after you get done with them. Don't leave blank lines at the end of your code. Use good variable names, define all the parameters at the start of your code, input all your methods at the beginning, your functions. Or methods at the beginning of your code. Comment all the units of your variables. Use descriptive variables. And then Python, it's case sensitive, so you don't have to worry about this. But some languages like IDL are not case sensitive, so you can get confused with the upper and lower cases when you want to search for them. So be consistent all the time, like in Python. If you use equations, provide a reference for them equations. Where did you get that? Comments on the units and how you calculate the equations. Four spaces for Python. And then when you provide comments, don't just tell me what the code line does. I know what print does. I know what for loops do. Don't just say, oh, this prints out the variable. You got to describe the logic and the things of what you're doing for that. When you're executing code, provide some print statements so that it doesn't just sit there and you know what the code is doing. Is it running right? Is it giving us some feedback? You need to have some of that information out. Do good plots that you can put right into your publications. Define your tick values, your labels with units for your X and Y axis. Make the start and stop intervals that make sense. Use fonts that are large enough. Most of the fonts that are defaults are kind of small, particularly Matplotlib. So a lot of times you got to increase the font size. And please, it's not a high school thing. I don't know. Titles should not just be a repeat of the X and Y axis. Don't say the X versus Y. I know what's on the X and Y axis. I don't need to see that in the title. Don't give a title unless it's meaningful and gives you additional information. So that's the examples of the Python. So, and that's on my programming guide. So that's my little tutorial there. So programming style. So now I got 15 minutes to wrap up. Any questions on programming styles? That can be contentious in terms of people have different styles. So how do we do that? Any questions about programming styles? Anybody still out there listening? All right, people are still here. I got one person that says they're here. That's good. Programming styles. So where do we go from here? What have you learned? What's left to learn and where do you go? So one of the things you can do is go to my website here. So when I'm done with this, I'll go through and I'll put the videos and the files up probably underneath these breaks at the beginning so that you can get the videos and the Jupyter notebooks. So since we went pretty fast, you can go back over them, review them. I will send out an email with some feedback in terms of a search survey. I will include this link. And the other thing is to assess what you learn. I will go back to this link, which I'll provide. Calgary Hill analysis of Vilplots data. So if you go right under here, that will pull you up to this page. And so what you should have learned today is enough information to write a program that would read in a data file and make a plot. So there's a text file called fill above 4 kilometers with this name.txt that's in this tar file. So if you download this tar file, it has that text file within it and it also has this PNG file. So the idea is you should be able to use Pandas, read this data file in, and make the plot below using Matplotlib. And then do a couple calculations to do these Velmetric 30 and Velmetric 70 in this code. So the idea is that this is kind of your graduation assignment. If you want to do this, I'll give you a certificate saying that you did the course and you completed and learned the material. So this is kind of like the final exam. So download this data file and read it in. And I got to be careful because in that data file, there's not the example. But I'll show you quickly what you've learned in this program, because I've done this example. And I'll show you quickly, but now everybody can go back and read my plots. So I don't want to show you the answer. And I did this not inside of Jupyter Notebooks, but as a regular program. So this is just a text editor to show you the code. So this is code I've been working on in the last couple of weeks. And this is standalone code so that I can run it from a command line. However you want to do this. This one loops through all the text files in this directory. So it actually looks for the text files that are here. We have two of them. You can also just give it a argument on the command line to do this. This is a little bit more than what you have to do. I just want you to make this one plot. If you want to take it, I use Gobble to look and see what's in this directory. And then you can look at the file. It comes up with the file names automatically for this. And then you create a PNG file. So you see I've outputted it. Here's my PNG file, number of points. The Velmetric is the number of points, the percentage ratio above 30, which is given here. So there's only one data point below 30, and there's none above 70 in here. So that's what the Velmetric is, the ratio above that value to the total number. So you can look at the data, you can plot this up to do the data files, and everything that we did today, you should be able to download that data file, print this up. And if I go back and show you my plot, so at the beginning, I have this doc string that goes through. Put some modification, the examples, how to run the program like this in there, some examples of what you would do, how to run the program, and then I import a bunch of data. I have a definition. So these are all my imports. So you should recognize Gobble, Math that we use, Matplotlib, Pandas. There's a couple ones that we haven't done. Like system that gets stuff from the command line, and date time will convert data to the date time, so you see the nice output of the hour, minutes, and seconds that are given there. I define a function for seed time, which is not really talked about in this method, but and then some if then statements. So if statements. And there's a for loop in here. So do up that program. And a hint to people that are new and working with me, Your request is that you're going to write this so that I know that you know how to program. So you can do this and create a good program in the data files. So that's the object of doing this. So you want to create this data file and download this file name. So that's to make sure that you actually know how to apply this data. And the other thing is, if you want, I'm going to put the data up for this program here, but you can also go and look at the previous times I've done the class. If you go on to teaching, classes, Python, I'll put the ones up from today. If you want a little bit more explanations, there's other videos from April, May, when we went over this, where there's recordings for each of the different functions, that different parts that we talked about. Each one's about an hour long, so there's additional information there, additional notebooks, because I skipped some of the material today. So with that, I will send out an email to everybody, and the ones that want to do this, try it out. Everything that you should now know and recovered to make that plot. So I will quit there, and I have 5 minutes for questions, and hopefully I'll send out a survey to do this. And so the idea is that you try out your new skills, and please send me an email with feedback on if you thought this was useful, if we should do this in the future. And tonight I'll upload the videos so you can go back, look at the stuff so you can figure out how to read that data file in. So with that, I will stop talking, see if anybody wants to give me any final comments. Maddie asked, what should we do? So the idea of the FIDO project is to go, and the idea is I want you to make this plot. So make this plot with everything in it. You should be able to do it just like this. And you can get the data file by downloading this TAR file. You can use Windows, Macs, Linux. It doesn't matter what you use. You can actually do it in Jupyter Hub if you want. You gotta get the data file, you gotta upload that, read it in, and make this plot. And this TAR file has both the PNG and the data file to read. Other questions? Any comments? So everybody should do this so they can analyze the data. All right, 2 minutes left. Any questions? Email me if you got questions. I think the Jupyter Hub should be up for a while, but you should save everything off the Jupyter Hub if you want, because it won't live forever. As part of the crowd, it can disappear, evaporate, rain out, whatever you want to say, the crowd resources. So students that are new to Python, please try to work on this. Send me the plot, send me your code. I want you to show and do that code, even though it may not be related to your research. It's the idea of applying what you learn. So with that, I'll just let everybody go. I'll stop sharing my screen and stop the recording.